Pseudopod number 17, December 22nd, 2006. Today's story, Upon the Midnight Clear, by Stephen Dedman. Hi there. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast magazine. I'm your host, Murr Lafferty, co-editor along with Ben Phillips. And while Halloween is a proper time for horror, Christmas is becoming a more popular setting for the scary. I suppose it's because of the dichotomy of peace on earth versus lurking horrors. So often in our lives do we look at brightly spangled trappings and wonder what dark secrets they're hiding. There's anticipation and mystery, and a Schrodinger's cat sort of situation where, just for a moment, there could be anything in that present you're about to open. A nice bottle of bath salts, the deed to a bowling alley, or the Necronomicon. Our story this week is Upon the Midnight Clear by Stephen Dedman. Mr. Dedman lives in Western Australia and is the author of the novels The Art of Arrow Cutting and Foreign Bodies. His short stories have appeared in the year's best fantasy and horror, Asimov's, Fantasy and Science Fiction, Interzone, and Realms of Fantasy, among others. The story is read for us by the ever-talented J.R. Blackwell, who is the mind behind the Flash Fiction A Day site 365 Tomorrows and its accompanying podcast, Voices of Tomorrow. So heat up the hot chocolate and cuddle into a blanket. It's time for that glorious song of old.
Upon the Midnight Clear by Stephen Dedman. You on your own, then? It was a question I was sick of hearing, and I guess my expression showed it, because the goth recoiled slightly. Yes, I said, more mildly than I felt.
On holiday?
Uh-huh. I stared at the window, pretending to look at the northern English scenery, which consisted of snow and not much else, and even that wasn't easy to see in the darkness. At least it was warm on the bus. But why do I always end up sitting next to some weirdo? How far are you going? She asked. I didn't answer. I'm getting off in Carlisle.
Hawick, I replied. Got friends there?
No.
Family?
I shook my head.
Then what do you want to go there for?
We're having a party tomorrow. Why don't you come along? We can find a bed for you easy enough. I stared at her balefully, and noticed that her earrings included linked female symbols and a double-bladed axe. I admit, since I caught Stuart in bed with one of my students, I've occasionally thought that all men should be given a choice between castration without anesthetic or the electric chair, but that doesn't mean I'm a dyke. No thanks. I mean, well, spending Christmas by yourself is bad enough, but spending it in a hole like Hawick. She pronounced it hoik. It'll be a great party. I won't be staying there. I'll be going straight to the castle, I replied. I'm from L.A., and I've never had a chance to sleep in a real castle before. And Christmas is just a rip-off anyway. Ho, ho, bloody ho. She smiled, and then turned even more pale beneath her makeup. Hermitage Castle? Yes. She was mercifully quiet for a while, as though thinking of something to say. Must be difficult, though, traveling on your own. Dangerous, even. I laughed, probably for the first time since the plane landed. I'd heard that too often before. Dangerous? This place? She looked and sounded sincere enough, though it was hard to be sure with that makeup and accent. I teach Jeet Kune Do and self-defense. The scariest thing I'd ever seen since I got here was Phantom of the Opera. I admit, I didn't actually plan to be making this trip alone, but my fiancé dumped me in November, and I was stuck with the ticket. I'm enjoying it more than I expected. So, what have you got around here that's dangerous? Serial killers or just drunks? She was silent for a moment.
Are you superstitious?
I laughed. I'm not even Californian.
Do you believe in ghosts?
No. She stared past me into the darkness, and I did the same. It was easy enough not to believe in ghosts in L.A., but this is a much older world. I shivered slightly, and then told myself I was being stupid. I guess you could call him a serial killer, said the goth softly. He's probably killed at least 100 people by now. All of them lone travelers like yourself, backpackers and hitchhikers and walkers. If there is just one of him, that is, there may be a gang or maybe a whole murderous family. It's hard to tell what's real and what's some sort of urban myth. Well, not really urban, not out here, but a myth anyway. I nodded. I'd been on a Jack the Ripper walking tour while I was in London, and I know how legends grow up, around even the most unglamorous killers, thugs like Manson and Dillinger and Wyatt Earp. They call him Red Cap because he wears this floppy red cap, like an old-fashioned nightcap. They say he dyes it with blood, human blood, and when he's been very busy, he dyes his jacket red, too, sometimes even his trousers. When he's been frantically busy, he's red from the tip of his cap to the top of his great heavy boots. And this is his busy time, his favorite time, close to the winter solstice, when the nights last forever and it's too cold outside for people to venture out or even go to stare out of a window unless they desperately need to. He likes the old ruined abbeys and monasteries, and other places like the Roman roads. I suspect that's where he finds his victims, because there's not much else but ruins to attract the travelers up here. But he never travels very far from the border. Maybe he's staking out a territory, or maybe he doesn't have a car. Maybe he's homeless and lives in one of the ruins. I shuddered again, and then got a grip on myself. I'd encountered plenty of street people near Venice Beach, and worse. Does he have a gun? I don't think so. No problem, then. The goth shook her head violently. I think he uses an axe. A large axe. Maybe in a halberd or something. Though I've heard some say he has a machete, or a claymore, or a scythe. Anyway, he decapitates his victims, and he must take the heads with him, because none of them have ever been found. Fortunately, most of them still have their passports, or they'd be impossible to identify. Her voice sounded slightly dreamy, but terribly sincere. I stared at her, but she didn't even smile, she just looked through the window of the bus. Carzile, she said. Are you sure you wouldn't rather come to the party? The bus was already slowing. I noticed a girl standing at the stop, waiting. Her head was shaved, and she carried a potted palm and a skateboard. No thanks, I said, snapping out of it. It had to be the best pickup routine I'd ever heard, but not good enough to make me give up on men just yet. Okay, she said, looking rather crestfallen, and then grabbed her day pack from the overhead rack as the bus groaned to a halt. Then she reached into her jacket, removed a notepad and calligraphy pen, and scrawled something on a page, which she ripped out and handed to me. My name and number, in case you change your mind about the party. Have a Merry Christmas, she said, sadly. Thanks. And to you. You'll have the place to yourself, said my host, puffing slightly, as he struggled to get my backpack up the ancient stairs one-handed. We've only done up the one tower, and there's nobody else here tonight. The room in the castle didn't look as large or as comfortable in reality as it had in the brochure, but I was used to that. Most of the renovations had been for the sake of weatherproofing, and were obviously anachronistic, even the tiny four-poster bed. I didn't really mind. I prefer a toilet to a garderobe, and rugs, even tartan rugs, to rushes any day. I would have liked some electricity, too, but the fireplace near the bed was a nice touch, big enough for roasting a pig, if not an ox, and with a real fire behind the grate. I'll be in the cottage if you need anything, my host wheezed, as he dropped the pack just inside the doorway. Good night. Oh, and Merry Christmas, he added, a little hesitantly, leaning on the door frame with his left hand slightly extended. I took out my wallet to give him a tip, and noticed the piece of paper. Have you ever heard of Red Cap? I asked. He blinked, and his blue eyes seemed to disappear into his scarlet face. The fairy? Fairy? Elf, goblin, would be the best name for him, I guess, he chuckled. Scottish elves aren't like American elves. Mostly, they're a bit like life in the Middle Ages. Nasty, brutish, and short. Red Cap's one of the worst. He's small but strong, with red eyes and big teeth. And he likes to kill travelers just to dye his cap red. Or he did in old wives' tales. They say you can keep him out by leaving a sock under your bed. It always works for me. He shook his head and chuckled again. So, who's been telling you fairy stories? Just a girl I met on the bus, I replied,
feeling a little foolish, and tipped him twice what I had intended. Ho, ho, bloody ho. He grinned. At least you didn't ask about the castle ghost. Is there one? He shook his head. I could rattle some chains outside of your door if you like, but no, I've never seen one. Mind you, I don't believe in the Loch Ness Monster either. Who does? Thank you. Good night. As soon as he was gone, I locked and bolted the door and began peeling off my clothes. I was too tired to go back down to the cottage for a shower. I just wanted to go to bed. Alone. The bed was barely big enough even for one of me, and as hard as it was small. Nevertheless, I fell asleep immediately.
Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
I was dreaming that I was Lady Macbeth when I was woken by the sound of a voice murmuring a Christmas carol. I rolled over, disoriented by the huge shadows thrown by the dying fire.
Don we now our gay apparel, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Methought I heard a voice cry, "Sleep no more," I muttered, and I tried folding the pillow around my ears. When that didn't work, I grabbed the electric lantern my host had left me and rummaged through my overnight bag for my earplugs and night mask. That muffled the noise enough for me to ignore it, and I rolled over and tried to return to sleep. I had almost succeeded when I heard creaking footsteps and something that might have been singing punctuated by laughter. I pulled one of the earplugs out and listened. The footfalls sounded as they were coming from the room above me, but that must just have been an echo. My host had told me that the room was empty.
"Over the fields we go," I heard someone sing, "laughing all the way."
The voice sounded thin and stretched, rather like one of those musical Christmas cards that's been left in a box of ornaments for too long, so the battery's gone flat and turns "We wish you a Merry Christmas" into a funeral march. I peeled my night mask off and stared at my travel clock. 12 past midnight.
"Bells on bobtail ring," the singer continued, "making spirits bright."
It still sounded as though he was in the room above. Maybe it was my host, more than a little drunk, playing some sort of prank. A ghost act to frighten the tourists.
"Oh, what fun!"
Or maybe it was the goth and her friends having a slumber party joke, bringing the party to me after I refused to go to it. Ho, ho, bloody ho.
"It is."
The voice sounded clearer now, still harsh and unmusical, but loud, as though it were coming down the... There was a crash, and two huge boots appeared in the fireplace, scattering the embers. Above them was a pair of red trousers. Santa Claus? I stared as one of the boots kicked the grate aside and a lumpy sack was thrown into the room. I'd stopped believing in Santa Claus 20 years ago, but... The neck of the sack parted and a human head rolled out. The fat, short elf in the fireplace stepped towards me. He was wearing red from the top of his boots to the floppy cap on his head and carrying a scythe.
"To sing,"
he warbled and lashed out with the scythe. I tried to parry it, but misjudged, and the blade sliced into my arm and cut it to the bone. The pain was worse than anything I'd ever experienced before, and I almost blacked out. The elf grinned, revealing long, sharp, brown teeth, and held out his cap to catch the bright red blood spurting out from my arm as I screamed. The scythe rose again, and I rolled over and fell out of bed in an instant before the blade penetrated the mattress. I grabbed the first item of clothing I could to wrap around my arm, then scrambled backward towards the door, and without taking my eyes from him, reached up for the latch. His grin broadened, and he crooned,
"A sleighing song tonight,"
as he walked slowly towards me. I opened the door, backed away through it onto the landing, and fell down the tower's spiraling steps. He continued to sing as he followed me, his huge, heavy boots ringing on the stone stairs. I lay there at the foot of the steps, wanting to move but unable to get my legs to cooperate, as though my body refused to believe I was in any danger. The elf oozed his way down the narrow staircase like toothpaste through a nozzle. At least he'd stopped singing. "Get away from me," I shrieked. "You're not real. I don't believe in you." He seemed to hesitate for a moment, then raised the scythe. It was a clumsy weapon for such a confined space. There was no room to slice, only stab, but that would have been lethal enough. I reached for the latch, opened the door far enough to squeeze out, and ran. The ground was thick with frost, and I slithered painfully towards the cottage, not daring to look back. "This isn't happening," I thought, as the pain in my feet subsided to numbness. "I don't believe it. There's no such thing as..." The cottage was dark and silent. I hit the front with a thud, but there was no response. I screamed for help and beat on the door with my fists, pausing occasionally to listen, but no one stirred. I glanced back over my shoulder, seeing my bloody footprints where the skin of my feet had frozen and peeled away, and then the door to the tower opened, and Redcap hurtled out. Despite his fat and his nailed boots, he ran quite quickly, maybe too quickly for me to outrun him for long. I continued to pound for a few seconds, then glanced around for somewhere else to hide. There was a phone booth 20 yards away, an old-fashioned box in glass. Still screaming, I hurtled towards it. The elf grinned, then changed his course to intercept mine. His scythe swung at my neck, and I dropped to the ground and slid. I shut myself into the phone booth and collapsed on the floor, panting. It smelt of piss, but maybe that was me. For the first time, I noticed how cold I was, naked apart from a t-shirt and whatever I had wrapped around my arm, which turned out to be my Levi's. I looked around for Redcap, but he'd vanished. Hunting for easier prey, perhaps, or just waiting behind the opaque side of the booth for me to venture outside. I slithered into my jeans, wrapped the t-shirt around my bleeding arm, and put my hands into my pockets for a little extra warmth. I found coins in one, a screwed-up scrap of paper in the other, a name and a phone number. The Goth. I hesitated for a moment, then dialed 999 and asked for an ambulance. The operator wearily promised to send one as soon as possible. Her tone implied that she'd thought I'd cut my arms myself, though that may just have been her accent. Lots of people committed suicide at Christmas, didn't they? I sat there and shivered, for a moment, trying to convince myself that I wasn't crazy or suicidal, that I hadn't done this to myself, that there really was a red-capped elf with a scythe waiting outside to murder me if I left the booth. It was hard enough convincing myself. How was I going to convince the paramedics? What if he killed the paramedics? Maybe I should call the cops as well. No, British bobbies don't carry guns. They'd be walking into a trap, too, if they came, if they believed me, if they didn't try to lock me away as a suicide. Maybe I was just having a nightmare, but I'd never been this conscious of smells and pain and other sensations in a nightmare. My arm was throbbing, my feet were hurting more as they thawed slightly, my nipples were so tight from the cold they felt like toothaches. I'd never been able to read in a nightmare, either. I blinked, and realized I'd curled up into a fetal ball. I took a deep breath. I wasn't crazy. I wasn't trying to kill myself. I had seen a homicidal Santa Claus try to decapitate me, seen a head roll out of his sack. Red Cap did exist. The Goth knew about him. She knew I wasn't crazy. I looked around, reached for the receiver again, inserted a few coins into the slot, and dialed the number on the scrap of paper. The phone rang a dozen times before someone picked it up and yelled, "What?" over the background music. "Morgan?" I croaked. A moment's hesitation, just long enough to wonder whether I dialed the wrong number, then, "Nah, morgue, phone." One of the booth's glass panels shattered. I turned, but saw nothing but darkness, and screamed into the receiver. A moment later, I heard, "Hello?" "Morgan, it's Julie, the girl from the bus. I'm at the castle and, Redcap's here. He's trying to kill me." I heard my voice rising and quivering and tried to get a grip of myself. "What? Where are you?" I gulped for breath. "In a phone booth outside. He's still hanging around somewhere. He has a scythe. He's cut my arm open with it. I've called an ambulance, but I don't know when they're going to get here. Is there anything I can do?" There was a long silence. "You're serious, aren't you?" I stared at the hole in the side of the booth. Dead serious. More silence. What are you wearing?
What?
It's just a legend, she said, sounding flustered. But wearing your clothes inside out is supposed to be protection against elves. Or there's crosses or iron knives or... I can't remember anything else. Sorry.
Turn my clothes inside out? What's that supposed to do?
I don't know. Act as armor, maybe. Look, I can borrow a car and drive over just in case the ambulance is late.
Thanks, I said, and unable to think of anything else to say, said goodbye and hung up.
I peered into the darkness for a moment, then unbuttoned my jeans and struggled to turn them inside out. I stepped back inside them, then unwrapped the T-shirt from my arm, tore a few pages from the phone book to serve as a bandage, turned the shirt inside out, and put it over my head as though it were a sack. I heard another pane of glass shatter and screamed, and heard something whisper, "Tisk, tisk, a big girl like you can't even dress yourself properly." Maybe it was Red Cap. Maybe it was just a voice inside my head. I didn't know. To drown it out, I started singing, "Silent night, holy night, a big girl like you, wetting herself like a baby. All is calm, all is bright." Another pane smashed. How did the rest of the song go? I drew a deep breath and began, "Hark the herald angels sing, a big girl like you, believing in fairies." I wanted to look, but didn't dare. Seeing him out there would have been bad enough, possibly even fatal, but not seeing him would mean it was just a voice in my head. A big girl like you, believing in Santa Claus.
Glory to the newborn king, peace on earth and mercy mild.
You're going to bleed to death. You're going to freeze.
We three kings of Orient are, I quavered. Bearing gifts we travel far.
Sorrowing, sighing, bleeding, dying, sealed in the stone-cold tomb, the voice sneered. I tried to keep singing, but my voice had dried up. It sounded too much like his to bear. I sat there in silence for what seemed like hours, until I heard the door open. Someone grabbed my arms, and I screamed. I opened my eyes and saw nothing but whiteness until I managed to focus. There was no point in asking where I was. Old hospitals have a stench of disinfectant that you could cut with. Well, you know. I looked around. My arm was bandaged from palm to elbow and tethered to the side of the bed. There was a little box with a button near my hand. I pressed it, and a nurse walked in a few minutes later. Morgan visited me after breakfast and told me that the caretaker had found me in the phone booth, having wandered out after hearing the glass breaking. "They think I'm crazy, don't they?" I asked. "They think that I did this to myself." She hesitated, then nodded. "You're on your own in a strange country. You've just had a relationship breakup. It's Christmas. Big time stress. No one would be surprised if you were depressed. Amazed you weren't, really."
"I'm fine. Well, I was until yesterday."
A shrug. "They've tried to contact your fiancé, but he didn't answer, so they got your parents instead. Your insurance covers you for a stay in the hospital if they call it an accident. So if I were you, I'd go along with that. You'll get out of here a lot sooner that way. Say you cut your arm on something, opening your Swiss Army knife or whatever. You ran to the phone, you passed out there, they'll buy it."
"And what about Red Cap?"
She blinked, then shook her head. "Better just call it an accident. Do you need anything? Books or whatever? They brought your backpack in."
"Not now, thanks.
I'll leave it where you can reach it. Anyway, I better go. It's a bit early for visitors. Would you like me to come back?"
"Yeah, thanks.
What's the time?" She smiled. "About 4 a.m. Mary, bye."
"Bye."
I sat there for a few minutes, then rolled onto my side, leaned down, and unzipped my backpack. Stuart's head grinned up at me, and I heard someone whisper, "Merry Christmas."
Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license. Our theme music you heard at the beginning is by permission of Anders Manga, and you can find them at andersmanga.com. But currently you're listening to music from A Very Scary Solstice by permission of the good people at the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, and you can find them at cthulhulives.org. The editorial team of Pseudopod consists of Mer Lafferty, Ben Phillips, and publisher Steve Ely. We're a paying market for horror, so we'd appreciate any donations you can slide to us. Tune in next week for some more scary stuff, and if your solemn oath just isn't enough to convince you, horror stories should impress upon you that it's never a good or safe idea to cheat on your mate. Scary solstice to you all, and to all a good night.
Abhorrent and ancient, O Cthulhu.